The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Russia's president this morning, harsh rhetoric. Vladimir Putin delivering a speech, a television address, in which he issued a stark warning to the people he called Russians traitors, scum and traitors who side with the West.
But any people, the Russian people especially, are able to distinguish true patriots from traitors and will spit them out like a gnat that accidentally flew into their mouths. I am certain that this necessary and natural self-cleaning of our society will only strengthen our country.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, when I heard that, it made me think of Adolf Hitler. Good afternoon, I'm Drew Mariani. Good to be with you. Let's cleanse and strengthen our own country, right? Anyone who speaks out, who exercises a freedom of speech, according to Vladimir Putin in his country, is a dissident. They're scum. They should be spit out, like he said in another translation, like a fly that accidentally flew into one's mouth. That was Russian President Vladimir Putin. He went on TV to vilify Russians who don't back him. He called them traitors. He called them scum, really. That's the other word he used. One of the outcomes of Russia's war on Ukraine is Russia's increased anger, also here with our own country, right? He also said something else that concerned me a little bit. In a speech from the former president, Dmitry Medvedev, he warned that Russia might have to put all of our brash enemies in place. And a warning, they might have to put the U.S. in place. How do you do that? Can somebody explain what he's talking about? How do you put the U.S. in its place? He claims the U.S. has been stoking what he's calling Russophobia. He's doing that in order to try to, you know, bring the Great Bear to its knees. You know, part of the justification for Russia's invasion in Ukraine is the claim that Ukraine was committing genocide. Right? They were. Show me the evidence. Show me the evidence. Vladimir Putin said Russia, or that Ukraine was committing genocide against Russian speakers living in the eastern part of the country called the Donbass region. He went in and quickly took that over. Of course, Ukraine utterly rejected that accusation. And Putin and Medvedev, they're claiming the U.S. is trying to tear the Russian Federation apart. You know, and of course, that's an accusation that we reject, and so do our allies. This is the misinformation war that we're seeing, right? The Russian people are not getting news. They're not able to speak their minds. They're not able to protest. And the president's going to do what he wants to do. And it's really quite tragic. So we're going to pray. And again, I'm monitoring these events. I won't dive too deeply into this right now for you. But I believe the consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart will certainly change things. I think better days are ahead. Sometimes it gets dark. It's darkest before the dawn, right? I think that's what we might be seeing right now, things intensifying. There was a memo allegedly from a Russian spy in the SFB. That's the agency that succeeded the KGB, the FSB. But it claimed that that Putin's invasion of Ukraine upended Chinese President Xi Jinping's plan to invade Taiwan, that Xi wanted to go into Taiwan. But because Putin did this, he upended it. According to Fox News, the agent wrote that the FSB is seriously considering claiming that the battle on Ukrainian territory, that's a U.S. war against China. That's how they're seeing this, in which the Americans simply set us up and used us. Again, we're in this information war, right? Very compelling take for sure. Fox has authenticated the document. It dated to March 5th, so not that old. China, are they ready to invade Taiwan? Here's what Al Jazeera had to say earlier today about Chinese threat on Taiwan.
Taiwanese soldiers fire artillery shells at a target representing advancing enemy forces. The democratically self-ruled island is conducting military exercises to prepare for a potential assault by Chinese forces. They follow repeated incursions by Chinese warplanes into the island's air defense zone. Taiwanese leader Tsai Ing-wen, seen here watching army reservists train last week, says the war in Ukraine proves Taiwan needs to be prepared to resist threats from China. In a sign of increasing tensions between the two countries, reservists have been mobilized for 14 days this year rather than the usual seven. In Taiwan's capital, Taipei, they've been demonstrating in support of Ukraine's resistance to the Russian invasion. And 4,000 boxes of medicine, food and blankets have been collected for Ukrainian refugees.
So a lot of turmoil in the world. Let's continue to pray for peace. We'll see what happens in the not-too-distant future regarding Taiwan. But you've got to hear this other story, too. This is a bizarre one. And it's despicable. I want to thank John Harper for sending me this story the other day. He sent me over a text. I just wrote back a simple one line to my former colleague here. I said, disgusting. That's it. The other word I should have used was despicable. Citigroup, I don't know if you're one of their credit cards or you use their bank. Citigroup, one of the largest banks in the world. Guess what they're doing? They're offering their employees free transportation to a state, not even to the local, but to a state where abortions are offered if the state they live in doesn't have abortion available. Why does everybody think this is such a great move? You know, you're willing to spend that type of money to get an abortion? Well, what if I needed some other treatment? If I need chemo, for example, would you fly me to another state so I can get my chemo treatment and take it out on the Citibank bottom line? I don't think so. There's something just so nefarious and so bizarre about our time, and where abortion is like a high and holy sacrament, and we'll do anything to go ahead and make sure that women can abort their children and personally have a wound that they'll never heal from. Well, I shouldn't say never heal from, but they will carry for the rest of their life. There's not a woman I know who has had an abortion that does not regret having had it, you know. And some women will deny it. I think they'll be in denial for a while. I remember the story of Yvonne Florzak-Seaman. I don't have time to share it all with you now, but this woman had multiple abortions. Four was on her fifth abortion. And She bought the lie initially. The first four she thought were just tissue. She didn't think it was a human life at that point in time. Her fifth abortion, you know, when she came out, something went wrong. And realized that she was hemorrhaging and had to go to an ER. And the nurse was treating her. She says, oh, my gosh, they didn't get all the baby. And she says, what baby? What are you talking about? It's tissue. And she says, oh, yes, I'm sorry. They didn't get all the fetus. And the woman backtracked. But it was an eye-opener for her. You know, and it radically transformed her. She went down this very dark path of codependency and addiction and a whole bunch of other things, only to find freedom and healing, and is now helping other women. She's a really heroic lady. Got a lot of respect for her. But, you know, you talk to her, you talk to anyone who's been down this path, it's a great regret. And yet you got groups like Citigroup now offering free transportation to other states. Would they do that for somebody who's got chemo or needs some other procedure? I don't know. Maybe they would. I doubt it, though. They're also going to provide a hotel room for that woman. So Citigroup apparently doesn't want their female employees to get pregnant. That's how you can read this, right? Yeah. If they're pregnant, they're going to be out on maternity leave, right? So why else would they be funding the abortion? I don't know. I mean, I really do not know why they would do that. Just a side story here I think you might find interesting, too. Paris, there was excavation being done, work underneath of Notre Dame. And guess what they found? This is kind of a cool little story. They uncovered a lead sarcophagus. They think it could date back centuries. And the excavation is being done as part of the restoration. Remember the fire devoured, you know, Notre Dame? It was horrible. The world looked in just horror. Well, engineers are making sure that things are safe for the installation of scaffolding to restore the interior. And one expert said that they were able to send down a small camera inside, which showed cloth remains and organic material like hair and plant remains. So the sarcophagus, they think, probably belonged to maybe a high dignitary. So we'll see what it ultimately reveals. But I love when history ultimately gives up some of its secrets, and we'll learn much more about that. Hey, I also want to just speak to you very quickly, if we could, about Fatima again, and I hope you'll join me in about 45 minutes, okay, because I'm going to be praying day two of our novena for peace, both in Ukraine and in Russia. We'll pray for the conversion of our leaders, but we'll certainly pray against any threat of war, especially nuclear war, anything that can really cause the suffering of so many innocent. And David Carolla is going to be joining me in just a moment here, and We'd love to have you join us. If you've got a question or a comment for him, feel free to join in. But I just saw a story this morning, a couple different stories, that Our Lady's Fatima statue, that is actually going to be visiting the Ukraine. So the International Pilgrim Statue of Fatima is going to tour Ukraine on a mission of peace and reconciliation. I don't know who's taking it. The initiative was from an Archbishop of Lviv, and I think the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church as well. And the rector of the Fatima Shrine said that, you know, in these troubling times, we have to turn to Our Lady. We'll find refuge in her and beg her for peace, and that's what we're going to do. That's the whole mission of Fatima. That is the whole mission of what Fatima is all about. You know, it's a call for peace. Our Lady came in 1917 before we had the before the rise of the Second World War. And what was her message? Pray the rosary. If not, you're going to see Russia. And I'll talk about Russia too, because Russia has an interesting little background. It will rise, she'll spread her error. She'll cause the persecution and the suffering of many, the annihilation of nations. She'll spread her errors. And we've seen that. Russia was ultimately consecrated. And in the end, I think we saw the fruit of that. But the second consecration, or not second, there's probably four consecrations in total, but the one John Paul II done was accepted not only by Sister Lucia, but by heaven, and even the Vatican has said as much. But the International Pilgrim Statue will depart from Lisbon, Portugal. It's going to head to Poland, to Krakow, and then it's going to be transported to Ukraine by a community of Greek Catholics from Lviv. And joining me right now to give us some perspective on what's going to happen and why they're doing this now and where we are on all this is none other than the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, David Carolla. It's great to have him here with us once again. David, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Good to be with you again.
Great. I saw a story today I'd love your take on as well. I understand that Our Lady of Fatima statue is going to be visiting Ukraine. It's the first time the pilgrim statue, I think it was dedicated, back in 1947. Give us a little history on this and why this is significant.
Well, it's very significant. I mean, the statue. This is one of the statues that comes from the shrine in Fatima, and bring Our Lady's presence. Of course, we have our statues here in the United States, our International Pilgrim Virgin, and our National Pilgrim Virgin statue that travel primarily in the United States. But this one comes right from the shrine. It's going to go through Poland into Ukraine, and believe me, there's just a lot of energy right now for what's happening over there, and people, the world is just in a tizzy about this, and of course, with the Holy Father doing the consecration a week from tomorrow, this is a very big part of it, to bring Our Lady's presence as the peacemaker into this situation that they have.
Yeah. Well, we're praying right now on the air. I know the World Apostle of Fatima is doing the same thing. A lot of people are involved in novenas. I had saw a story that the Catholic leaders in Moscow are actually welcoming the consecration to the Immaculate Heart. So that's really good news. And then the Latin American bishops are joining Pope Francis and Ukraine to in the consecration. And I think the Ukrainian Archbishop is also doing the same thing. Fill us in. What's happening around the world? Are bishops uniting in this consecration? Because I knew that one of the requests of Our Lady, wasn't it, that the Holy Father, in union with all the bishops, consecrate Russia?
Well, that's a collegial consecration. They're not necessarily saying that this is a collegial consecration again, right. But yes, they're joining in. And the Latin American bishops, and of course, we, the World Apostolate of Fatima, USA, in union with our international organization, World Apostolate of Fatima International, and our nation stations all around the world, we are, in our respective countries, sending a request to the Conference of Bishops. I penned one that went to the USCCB through our bishop, and we're asking that all of the bishops get involved next week, but not only the bishops, they ask all of their clergy, and they ask the people in their diocese to join in this consecration, which will be at 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time next Friday on the feast day, and which will be 5 p.m. In Rome, because remember, with daylight savings time, we went on a day early, or 2 weeks early, so right. They're still on standard time there. So at 5 p.m. in Rome, it'll be noon, 11 o'clock in Chicago, and what on the west, And we're asking everybody, we will here at the Blue Army Shrine, we're going to begin the Mass, the noon Mass, with the consecration. We're asking our bishop here to be part of it. And we are asking all of the bishops to get involved, and not only to be involved themselves, but get the faithful in their diocese to join in this request of Our Lady for peace, this consecration.
Well, I love it. I'm excited about it. I keep saying I think good things are going to come from it. We see tensions continue to rise in Ukraine. We see some people thinking we've already entered into World War III. I'm not looking on March 26th for any radical change, although it wouldn't surprise me. But I do believe that with the consecration comes grace and comes conversion. And I think good is going to come from this. Dave, can you take us through the history of this for just a second to give people perspective? I'm pretty pumped about it. I believe John Paul II on March 25th consecrated Russia as Our Lady had requested. It wasn't done perfectly, but it was accepted by heaven, Sister Lucia said. But my understanding is that on four different occasions, Russia has been consecrated to the Immaculate Heart. So is that nation seems pretty implacable. Again, maybe you can take us through the October 1st, 1942 one, but maybe even back in 1917 when Our Lady appeared, she specifically asked the children for Russia to be consecrated to her Immaculate Heart. So to prevent another world war. World War One was raging and coming to an end at that point in time, and then of course, we'd see the rise of the Second World War, but take us through the timeline if you could.
But this time in 1917, she said, "I will come back to ask for the consecration of Russia," she said. "We'll come back to do so." When did she come? 1939, at the very beginning of World War II. Pope Pius XII responded in 1942, Pope Pius XII responded by making a consecration, which he did not do collegially with the other bishops. World War II, what could he have done, possibly, especially communications as they were during the middle of a war? But Our Lady did say later, or Sister Lucia said that, Our Lady said later, that consecration shortened World War II. So every consecration has a positive effect, properly done, of course. And this, I think, is exactly, and it's just being done in the light of Fatima. It's not being stated that this is a collegial consecration. Many people out there say, see, he's finally doing it because they know the first one wasn't done right. Well, I don't think that's what this is all about. But throughout time, and then, of course, Pope John Paul II did the one in 1982, which was still insufficient. In 1984, as we've discussed before, Drew, that's when he drew the bishops of the world together and made the consecration, which did set things in a different direction in Eastern Europe. There is absolutely no denying that. Now, do things happen overnight? A lot of people, they say, yeah, well, look what's happening. We've never had peace, and look what's going on now. Look, you have to look at in the time of Christ. Everybody felt that when he died on the cross, that everything was going to be solved in the world the day after, right? Well, guess what? Even the apostles felt he was going to come back in their lifetime.
Yeah, good point.
This is God's time, Drew. This is God's time. And we have to make ourselves worthy. And that's why, we can't be saying, expecting God to stop everything. We have to do it. We have to to answer the call, to live our lives properly, to amend our lives, to work for the salvation of souls. And I just think here, do I want things to end right now when the world, is the world coming to an end? I don't think we're anywhere near that, in my opinion. Are we at the end of an era? I hope so. An era that was pretty evil, that hopefully will bring us this era of peace and time of advancement of the faith again. But, what about the conversion of the Chinese? What about the conversion of the Muslims? What about so many other things that we would hope would happen if we were charged by our Lord to bring the faith to the four corners of the world? Well, we failed. I mean, and that's not to discount the great work of so many missionaries and people who have done it over the years. But not only have we not gotten it, really seeded many places in the world, we've lost it in places where we had it, like in the West, in Europe, and here. So we have a lot of evangelizing and re-evangelizing to do. That's what the new evangelization is all about, right? To bring back the people and the cultures that have walked away from the faith. So we've got a lot of work to do. I wouldn't want to die tomorrow and God say, well, gee, you want it out. Well, unfortunately, we had a lot more work to do, buddy.
That's so true.
Right?
That is so true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dave, in terms of every consecration, you know, grace comes from it. That's what I really believe. I believe the real deal. I believe having accepted the consecration as Our Lady requested in 84. But I really do believe a lot of grace will come from this one as well. And I'm hopeful. I mean, the world can be, you can be filled with a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear right now. I mean, a lot of people are very concerned. I have a friend who is a very intelligent woman, very successful, very wealthy. And she called me a couple of days ago and was very concerned about the future. And yet she's deeply, you know, faith-filled. And I told her not to be afraid. This is before I heard words that Pope Francis was going to consecrate Russia. I'm expecting great things. I'm expecting it to happen fast. In terms of Russia, she played a big role in a lot of things. I always want to plug this for people because, you know, this is something I think that often gets washed over and not a whole lot of people know. First, I hope you'll join me in this 9-day novena leading up to the Fatima consecration or to the Russia-Ukrainian consecration. And I'm going to be praying the chaplet coming up in a moment. Father Rocky's praying the rosary. Dave, I know you guys are under a campaign as well at the World Apostle of Fatima. And maybe you can mention that. But also, I hope you'll join us that Friday when this goes down. Relevant Radio is going to give you live coverage. But there's one other aspect I want to get to, and that is that's First Saturday devotion. And specifically, you know, Our Lady talked about how important that is to bring about the conversion of Russia, right?
Well, very much so, because the First Saturday's devotion is what we need. That's the part of the Fatima message that has not been fulfilled. And truly, I mean, we need to make that reparation as was asked for so that we can usher in this era of peace, this triumph of the Immaculate Heart that was promised. You know, these things, it's like even though you talk about the consecration, we talk about, you know the First Saturday's devotion. But think about it. This consecration, if only the Holy Father and the other cardinal made a consecration, that's nice, and there'll certainly be blessings from it. But what if bishops all over the world, priests, lay people, organizations like the World Apostle of Fatima, like Relevant Radio, everybody hops in and says, we're going to join this consecration at the same time, and we're going to pray for the same thing. Well, God's going to hear a whole lot more prayers, and my feeling is, as a result of that, you're going to see tremendous things happen. So it's not just with, you know, one thing, not just the Holy Father. He's there to set the example and lead it, and God bless him. I'm so happy that he's doing this. But, you know, it's a call for us to participate and to be part of this. And the First Saturday's devotion, believe me, Drew, this is the key to it. I mean, once this is fulfilled, once people accept this and move towards making this, I truly believe that will bring about the fulfillment of Fatima. And you'll see the great fruits. I really, really believe that.
I agree with that. I only have a moment or two left. The third secret of Fatima, has that been fulfilled yet?
Well, fulfilled, been revealed. Yes, I think so. I mean, in a way, you don't want it to be fulfilled because remember, the one part was the angel with the flaming sword bringing about the conflagration on the earth. But what stopped it from happening? It was the hand of Our Lady that came out and kept that from happening. Well, this is the same thing we're doing today. That flaming sword may be ready to come down again. Yeah. Now let's pray. From now on, let's do this 9-day novena that we're promoting on our website, BlueArmy.com, and throughout our apostolate. You know, and of course, come in. I say, come in, join our apostolate, sign the pledge, be part of it. But follow this, pray this novena, and then on that day, make that, and maybe that hand will again keep that angel sword from coming down on us.
That's awesome.
Because, you know, I think that's the hope we have. Yeah. Fatima is the hope for the world.
The angel said, penance, 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 and that's what we're called to do. We want to avert wars. One of the things we have to do is this First Saturday devotion, I believe, and I hope everyone will join you. I hope they'll join Relevant Radio. We'll be providing live coverage that Friday of the consecration, and of course, join us in prayer. Dave, I'm going to leave it right there. We'll catch up again later in the week. We'll continue to take a look at this, or in the not-too-distant future, at least. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thanks, Drew. Take care.
That's David Carolla. Check him out. World Apostolate of Fatima. No, let me strike that. It's BlueArmy.com. BlueArmy.com. You can learn more about Fatima, the messages, and much more there. If I have time a little bit later, I'll share with you some interesting things about the Third Secret. We can talk about the four times Russia's been consecrated and how Our Lady of Fatima can actually stop world wars. All right? When we come back, we'll change gears, though. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, let's change gears. I want to share with you a great story. All right. I mean, there's so much negativity, right? You turn on the news, and I'm immersed in it. You know, I eat it, I sleep it, I sleep with it. I'm around it all the time. I read it, I watch it, I talk about it. There's a lot. It's easy to get overwhelmed by it. It's easy to even, I don't know, get a little anxious, or you can get depressed, because quite often, if it bleeds, it leads, right? It's not always this, it's not always a super positive news that's out there. I came across a story, and in a minute, Kevin Turley, who's a filmmaker and a writer and a journalist, he's been a guest on this program in the past, he's going to stop by. We're going to talk to him. I always love his perspective, his understanding of not just the faith, but of Hollywood. He'll be joining me here in a second. But I saw this story about a priest. And I think so often our priests can be vilified. People look at them in a way that is not with respect. And when I hear stories of sacrificial, heroic men, I think they deserve attention. And, you know, I look back at history. I look at the First World War and how brutal, how ugly, how hellish that war was. You know, World War I was nasty, just to be very blunt, right? Trench warfare, living in trenches. You know, we were dealing with poisonous gas. World War I, they think, may have actually brought about more deaths of soldiers, this living in the trenches, than the warfare itself. I mean, it was rough. Being a chaplain in that landscape had to be one of the most difficult assignments of that era. And I look at guys like Father Capodanno, who was in Vietnam, or the story of a guy named Father William Doyle. And I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He was an Irish Jesuit, and he signed up to be a chaplain in the midst of the Great War. You know, one author said, you know, he knew that a priest had been there with him to accompany them in the definitive hour when all would be lost or gained for all eternity. That's what this guy wrote. And when Father Doyle signed up, look, he didn't take advantage of the privileges that were offered to him as an officer. Instead, you know what he did? He marched like a grunt. He marched along with all the other regular soldiers. He slept in the trenches with them. He ate his meals with them. And he eventually died with them on the battlefield as he was giving last rites to one of the soldiers who had fallen. He spent hours mainly at night ensuring that the dead had a Christian burial. What a comfort. If I was in a war and I had a Catholic priest giving me last rites, being there for me, what a blessing. He comforted those who were sick. He comforted those who were wounded. And through it all, those who knew him said he had a ready smile for anyone who needed it. But that wasn't the extent of his holiness. I mean, before he ended up marching with the soldiers, he was a parish priest and one who, with the permission of his superiors, had carried out a lot of mortifications on himself, including the lash. Now, I know that's hard for us today to really get our head around, but mortification is something that I think many of us don't even practice. You know, how often do you fast? How often do you do penance? St. Faustina, Father Doyle, many of them did these mortifications, these harsh mortifications. Some great saints slept on the floor. Some would use the lash like he did. He didn't keep himself, you know, he didn't keep himself holy while calling his parishioners to holiness, but he did reparations for those who were in sin, especially for priests. So he offered his sufferings for fellow priests. I thought it was just, I think it's awesome. If you want to bring a conversion around in the life of your kids or your family, then do penance, do some suffering, you know, offer it up for them. I'm joined today by Kevin Turley. It's good to have him here with us. And Kevin, always a delight. Thanks for putting this on our radar too.
Thank you, Drew. Good to be with you, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to you, everyone at Relevant Radio, and all your listeners.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Today is actually it's kind of an anniversary for me, St. Patrick's Day. It's a very special day on the church calendar or on the calendar in general, just because my very first radio broadcast ever, my first national broadcast was on this day, and I did so horribly, I bombed so miserably. I should never have a career in broadcasting, but, you know, St. Patrick, I think, interceded, and what a great evangelist he was, you know, in terms of bringing back conversion and winning souls for God. So he's one of the great saints that I like to invoke. Hey, speaking of Father Doyle, and I think this is an important story to talk about today, especially in light of the threat of war and what we're seeing, and, and all the darkness that's out there. This is a great story. How did you come across Father Doyle, Kevin? And you know, why doesn't he appear widely known? I didn't know a whole lot about him until I read his story.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And well, I came across him totally by accident, Drew. I was doing some research in a monastery library. And this monastery library, I don't know if you've ever been in a monastery library, but it was huge, right? And I'd been given the run of the place. And I was browsing for, and I came across a very thin volume. And I think it was called something like Irish Lives or Irish Saints. I forget what it was. But I just took it out and I flicked through it. And everybody that was in it I knew, except somebody called Willie Doyle. Hmm. And I thought, never heard of this person. Who is he? And I just read what was there. And it really intrigued me. And it just so happened in the same library, I found the biography, the Alfred O'Rahilly biography from 1920, dusted it down, started reading it, and like you, thought to myself, A, why isn't this man a canonized saint? But B, why has nobody heard of him? His story is like something out of a movie. I mean, it's exciting, it's dramatic, but from a spiritual perspective, it's an absolute thriller, you know, from start to finish. So I came across him about 20 years ago, and then I wrote a very short life of him for the Catholic Truth Society, and I wrote it specifically. I said, we've got to get this man better known. You know, yep. We've got to get people to realize that they have this man, and not prejudging any judgments of the church, but I just wanted him to be out there. And then subsequent to that, other books and a film has been made about him. And then the latest news, which is hot off the press this month, Drew, is that the Father Willie Doyle Association has been given Episcopal approval in Ireland. Okay. And it's been given Episcopal approval by all the bishops of Ireland. And the Jesuit order in Ireland are very happy with it as well. And that is the first sort of lay initiative what we have of this nature to promote an Irish canonization cause. So Father Willie Doyle Association now can act as a vehicle to spread awareness of Father Willie's life and spiritual message, and ultimately act as the kind of catalyst, the official actor, they term it, for any future canonization cause. So I just wonder, Drew, is this sort of time come at last?
Well, you know, I said to my producer, Tom, his daughter was just diagnosed with a very aggressive melanoma.
Yes.
It's in her brain and her in her lymph nodes, and we're praying for her. And I said, Tom, this priest here, you know, I believe in turning to the blesseds, to the venerables, to the servant of God. It's quite often they need those miracles to move along that path to sanctity, to be raised to the altars. This guy was unbelievable in terms of his selflessness, his self-giving, his sacrifice, and it's something we need more than ever. We've been talking a lot about Fatima and consecration and the angel with the flaming sword crying out for penance and the Virgin asking for penance. And he, you know, the great saints like St. Faustina and like this Father Doyle, like Padre Pio, like so many others, they understood the importance of sacrifice and penance. Tell me a little bit about him. I know one of the weird things that I was sharing was that, you know, he would discipline himself. People think it's a moral thing, because sometimes that's portrayed. But I think it was reflective, really, of his holiness. So maybe before you get to that, bring us back. I tried to broad brush his story, but share with us who he was and the heroic nature of his life, and maybe a little bit about his spirituality, which I think is pretty profound.
Okay. So Willie Doyle was born into a well-to-do Catholic family in Dublin in March 3rd, 1873. And his upbringing was very upper middle class. It was very idyllic. He was educated in both England and Ireland at private schools. His family were devoutly religious, devoutly Catholic. Just to give you a measure of that, four of the seven children of that household were to enter religious life. Willie's brother also became a Jesuit priest. Willie entered the Society of Jesus and was ordained in 1907. Thereafter, he was assigned to what was known as the Jesuit Mission, which was to parishes throughout the British Isles. He was in Scotland, he was in England, he was in all over Ireland. And he was a great preacher, you know, the parish missions. He would turn up and he would preach and he would spend hours in the confessional listening to people's sins and confessions. And crowds flocked to him and lots of people were converted. And we have lots of witnesses who say, my life was totally changed. The thing that we only found out later, and I'll explain that in a minute, mm-hmm. is that after his death, the secret of his success was revealed, and it was namely penance. This is a man who would spend his nights in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Yes, he would use the discipline or the lash, but he would also go on nocturnal barefoot pilgrimages. He would immerse himself in the icy cold waters of lakes at night, all hidden from view, all undertaken importantly with the approval of a spiritual director. But this was his daily war on self. And it was a war which was with countless invocations for the mercy of God for sinners. And I'll come back to that in a minute, Drew. But this was a man who ostensibly was a happy-go-lucky, fun-loving. Everybody talks about his humor and his smile and his jokes and all the rest of it. So during the day, it was almost like a sort of figure. During the day, he was this wonderful person to be with and soul of the party, all the rest of it. But there was a real intense spiritual life underneath taking place, and nobody really knew about it. Now, when war broke out, he volunteered immediately because he realized that thousands of people were going to their death, and they needed, as you said at the start, they needed a priest because this was about eternity now. So he landed in France in 1915 with the Royal Irish Fusiliers, which just happens to be my great-grandfather's, he was in the Wow. same regiment as my great-grandfather, but that's another story. But anyway, and as you say, he was marching with the men. He said no thanks to the horse. He slept in the same trenches. And all his time, he was heroic to the point where he was awarded the Military Cross. Now, this was the British Army. There were no friends of Jesuits, you know. Yeah, right. And yet they saw a man who was absolutely tireless. He was constantly hearing confessions. And it's very touching, Drew, to read about the confessions before men are going to their death. He would say Mass for them before they went over the top. Wow. And then when they did go over the top, he would ignore the machine gun fire and he would run out into no man's land to anoint the dying, to give viaticum, or to try to drag people back to safety, the wounded. And then whenever everything settled down, he would then go out and literally, sometimes with his bare hands, bury soldiers in the ground because he knew that they needed a Christian burial.
Wow.
And he was as good to the Catholics as he was to the Protestants, everybody. Wow. But the other thing is this, Drew, which came across that, and you alluded to it at the start.
Well, you know what, Kevin, let me interrupt you. Let me ask you just to hold that thought, okay, when we come back.
Okay.
I want you to pick it up right there, okay? My guest today, Kevin Turley, we're introducing you today to a heroic priest. Maybe you're seeking some intercession for an important intention you have. Why not call upon Father Doyle? If you missed any of the conversation, you can go to my podcast. It'll be up when the show's over. And we'll link over to a great article where you can read and learn a little bit more about this heroic man of God. Back with Kevin Turley and more right after this. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's the theme from The Quiet Man, John Wayne movie. Nice job, Maggie. Good to have you all with me. A few moments, we'll pray the chapel to Divine Mercy, day two in our novena, praying for the grace, the fruit, the conversion that we know will come from the consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart by the Holy Father. So join me for that at 3, and of course, Father Rocky at 7 for the rosary. We'll continue to blanket this important intention with prayer. If you're just tuning in, if you're just joining me, I'm speaking today with Kevin Turley about the extraordinary life of a heroic priest by the name of Father Willie Doyle. There's a great article on his spiritual legacy, and Kevin, we're going to link over that to you, but I didn't mean to step on you. We had to take a quick break. Let me let you pick up on the story of Father Doyle, where you had left off.
Sure, Drew, and thanks for that. I mean, we're talking about him being in the absolute belly of the beast, First World War, in the trenches. He was regularly asked to take furlough, to take leave, to come back and rest. He refused. He stayed at the front all the time, almost, with his men. He was awarded the Military Cross. It should have been the highest award for gallantry possible. That's the Victoria Cross. But this proved impossible, some say, because he had a triple disqualification. He was Irish, he was Catholic, and he was Jesuit. But that didn't matter to him. You know, he wasn't interested in that. He had his eyes on a very, very different prize. But there's one aspect of his time at the front which really, really resonates with today, and I think has an impact further down the line for what his relevance is for Ireland and indeed the church today, and it's this. If you can imagine the First World War and the horrors of the First World War in that trench with the sounds of hell reverberating around him, he continued with his nocturnal adoration of the Blessed Sacrament on his knees with a pyx around his neck, adoring the Prince of Peace all the time, offering up reparation for priests and the sins of priests. Now, I mean, this is 1917, and he knew the challenge, the spiritual war that was then and is now around the priesthood in particular. So he continues with this. He marches with the men. If I mention the psalm and Passchendaele, he was there in the middle of it. There's a very, very moving bit where he says Holy Mass right at the front. And he describes how it is. He's got German bayonets and a biscuit box as a tiny altar. And he's saying Mass. And he absolutely loved saying Mass. And he said it wherever he could. But then he looked up and he realized that his Mass for the dead, he was surrounded literally with the dead stacked up in front of him. So anyway, he marches on the psalm, Passchendaele. Passchendaele was to be the end. And it came on August 16th, 1917. It was the Passchendaele offensive. He went into the dreaded no man's land to try and drag a soldier back to safety, and he's blown to pieces by a German shell. Now, the thing is, going back to what we were saying at the start, Drew, is that nobody really knew about his private devotions and the interior life that he'd been living for many years. But his private papers, after his death, which he said should be burned, weren't burned. Hmm. And somebody started reading them. And by 1920, a book, a biography, a spiritual study, it's called, by Alfred O'Rahilly, who was an Irish academic, published something called Father William Doyle, which you can still see on the internet quite clearly. And that revealed, in my opinion, the true sanctity of this very, very holy man. And he died without a grave. He doesn't have a grave because he's just marked on a memorial in Flanders. And his body lies there. And as I said in the article, it lies there until the next bugle call, the next reveille, which will sound across those fields, the true trumpet call, when he will rise to his true Lord, who he served through all of this. Not some Kaiser, not some king, but a true Lord. And in his train will come all those soldiers, all those souls that he helped at that final moment with that final absolution.
Wow, what a powerful story. You know, I know you were talking to Maggie during the break. I understand you have a very interesting statistic regarding this man and his achievements.
Well, that's right, Drew. When I was doing this research, I came across a statistic, which I had to double take, and it's this. At the end of the First War, it's reckoned 40,000 military personnel, British military personnel, converted to the Catholic faith. And they say that it was because of the witness of military chaplains, because of people like Father Willie Doyle. And I would go further and say because of the sacrifice of Father Willie Doyle.
Wow, that's amazing. Those are unbelievable numbers. Can you explain, you know, this is a man who understood penance, too. I think it's important to speak about that. I mean, self-mortification, people hear that, they make this connection to the Opus Dei book or movie that was out, you know, where that was, and, you know, so often it's portrayed in a bad way. Self-mortification was practiced to a degree by, you know, Pope Paul VI, by John Paul II, by Padre Pio. St. Faustina did it, St. Teresa Little Flower. I mean, you can go through the litany of different saints, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John Vianney. I mean, it goes on and on. Explain what he did and why. Maybe put that into perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the idea of mortification or penance is part and parcel of this of the Catholic, the spiritual life. It's always been. I mean, any saint, there's an element of mortification. It's interesting you mention Opus Dei, because St. Jose Maria, the biography that I mentioned about Willie Doyle, was translated into Spanish in the 1920s. And we know for definite that St. Jose Maria Escriva read it, because he references Father Willie Doyle in a number of letters. And if you read The Way, which is the sort of collected prayers of St. Jose Maria, there is what's known as the bit about the butter war. Do you know that bit, Drew, where he talks about, shall I have butter, shall I not? That is direct quote from Willie Doyle. Wow. That was Willie Doyle's daily butter war, as he called it. So mortification and penance is part and parcel, and as we know during Lent, it's part and parcel of the Christian calling. But rather than the sort of caricatures that you get about this sort of thing, penance is ultimately a prayer. It's a prayer of the body. And everything that Willie Doyle did was not some sort of masochistic thing. It was a prayer for others, especially for priests, and the sins of others, especially the sins of priests. And it was also reparation for his own sins. So really, we've got to contextualize that as something which is prayerful and something which is selfless and something which is ultimately an act of love. And it's also, in Willie Doyle's case, I think, true, an identification with the suffering Christ, with our suffering Lord. Yeah. It's a wanting to enter into Golgotha, to enter into Calvary. And that's how he saw it. Now, remember, this was a man who was in no way mawkish, no way unbalanced. He was the life and soul. People loved being around him. People flocked to him for spiritual advice, but just to be with him. This was a very balanced, centered individual. But he knew the importance of mortification in any Christian life. And also he knew as a priest that its absence was also to be something to be alerted to.
Huh. Well, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, Kevin, in light of, you know, Lent and what we can do, and also just in terms of what's unfolding in the world, from Fatima with the angel crying out for penance to the great example of the saints. I think it's a lost practice in our modern world, and especially in the Western world, and something that perhaps, you know, the faithful should consider. It will amplify your prayer. It'll help you speed down that path of holiness. And I think you'll see the fruit of your prayer as well. I got to leave it right there because I have less than a minute. Kevin, if people want to follow you, or if they want to read this story, what's the best way to connect to you?
It's probably ncregister.com, KV Turley. That would be the best way. If I could just say one last thing,
sure.
Drew, which
please,
is that Father Willie Doyle is not yet, I mean, his canonization cause is not opened. It's for others to start that, but
right.
As you said at the start, he's a man who there are lots of people who in your show and around your show who need prayers and need miracles. He will also need a miracle at some point as well. It could be a very mutually advantageous getting together with Father Willie Doyle. I'll leave it at that.
I love it. Kevin, thank you. Thanks for praying with me and spending time with me, and thanks for your great writing. Keep it up. We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, Drew. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you. That's Kevin Turley. I love it. He said exactly what I feel, what I believe. Let's call upon these servants of God, these beatified, these venerables, these men like Father Doyle, who lived heroic lives of virtue, who were examples to all of us. And I know God had a special place in his heart for them. Why not ask their intercession? We're all part of that communion of saints, aren't we?